Welcome back to the couch, everybody. Welcome into another NBA episode. Max and I are here right after watching OKC Denver Game 4. It was a game that David Adelman described in the postgame as a disgusting basketball game, but it was not boring by any means, Max. This was an absolute, one of the most intense games you're going to find. Nobody had any legs. Nobody could make a shot, and both defenses were excellent. We're going to talk about that game. We are going to talk about the Boston and New York series, and then we're going to give you our five biggest playoff risers at the end of this episode. So we got a jam-packed episode. Max, how are we feeling?
Feeling pretty good. Shout out to all the moms out here currently recording on Mother's Day. So shout out to all of our moms for everything, for all the great stuff they do. But yeah, man, this game, pretty gross, but I mean, intense is the best word to describe that. I mean, no one had any legs. Like you said, it was the highest level of like just grinded out basketball that you can get. I think they like both, it was like 92 to 87. So not a lot of scoring at all. And just two really good teams going at it. Two really good teams that are, you know, they really know what the other one's trying to do. And they're trying to think outside the box. And it's just like a fascinating experiment in basketball, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Story of the game to me, I mean, it's both defenses in general, but I thought OKC did an amazing job with their guards disrupting the Murray-Jokic two-man game. Just straight up, you know, Lu Dort, Cason Wallace, Alex Caruso staying attached to Jamal Murray, literally just denying the handoff on the two-man game and, you know, taking away what everybody thinks is the most unstoppable action. And they did a great job stopping it. That maybe is the best game I've seen of a defense truly taking away the Murray-Jokic two-man action. I thought that was absurd. I honestly can't believe the level that Denver's defense is at right now. After that stretch in the regular season where they were like one of the, you know, most disappointing defenses and everyone was really down on them, and I thought for good reason, they have gotten this defense to a level where it's like they look like a legit contender. They are hanging in there with OKC, who everybody thinks is the favorite out west. So an unbelievable defensive performance. But I thought this game came down to the role players on OKC side. Alex Caruso, Aaron Wiggins, Cason Wallace coming in that stretch. You know, Mark Dagnall has such a luxury with this roster to kind of fiddle with a bunch of lineups and a bunch of different guys. Lu Dort, amazing defender, could not make a shot tonight. And finally, Mark Dagnall, you know, decides to bench him and goes with Caruso. Wiggins gets some run and Cason Wallace gets some run. And in those minutes that those guys were in, those are the guys who made the shots against the zone that ended up breaking that Denver zone. And then, you know, OKC could go pick and roll once Denver abandoned the zone. So I thought those guys were huge. And, you know, for Denver, it's a thin roster. We've talked about it. And it's a tough, you know, rest situation playing at 3:30 after playing in an OT game the next day. I think, this game kind of speaks to the value of lineup versatility and depth. I don't know if it says anything about the series overall, because there's going to be different rest situations going forward, but this game specifically, Max, I thought the depth and versatility of OKC's roster really showed through with Denver's role guys struggling a little bit more than OKC's.
Absolutely. I mean, you said a lot there. Like, I think bringing it back a little bit, I mean, Jokic had 3 assists tonight.
Yeah.
And that was just because of OKC's defense. I mean, granted, a lot of the time, guys that he was passing to, their legs were just not there. The jump shooting was not going to be happening for them that night or tonight. But like you said, man, that lineup versatility, I think Denver cuts their lineups to like 8, I think. Yeah, it's about 8. And
and honestly, Peyton Watson only plays 8 minutes, and Strother only plays 4, almost 5.
Exactly. So it's really, it's Russ playing 26, and then everyone else is playing 34 or more minutes. And honestly, I don't think they would put in Peyton Watson or Julian Strother for as long as they did if Michael Porter Jr. wasn't as beat up as he is right now. Like, he only played 34 minutes tonight. I mean, only played, that's a lot of minutes for a guy who's literally wearing a shoulder pad right now. But he's so, like, he literally can't lift his shoulder. He shot 14% tonight. And they just had to put in those other guys just to get him out of there for a little bit at periods. And it was just such a, you're right. I mean, OKC just had more legs today. Like, Aaron Wiggins coming in, what he brought to the defensive end of the floor was insane, as well as the offensive end of the floor. And then Cason as well, man. Like, Cason is someone that we always really liked for his versatility. How he played, hitting those huge big threes today, were just, he was so important to OKC, and he was definitely what put them over top. I mean, like you said, those wing plays, that wing play, like, Denver was struggling, and this is a hard-fought series. I think, obviously, we were texting about this today. I mean, the fact that they're even here right now after firing their coach about a month ago is shocking, and I know how good Jokic is, so it's like, when you have a guy like that, you're always in it. But honestly, the other guys have really stepped up to the point where I thought this was going to be like a clean sweep, and the fact that they've got two games and kept it close in a third is pretty fascinating to me. And honestly, I don't think OKC is out of the water here yet. Like, I do you like do you think?
No, definitely not. Like I said, I think a lot of this game is, it's that rest situation, and it's the fact that OKC has all these young guys and they have all this depth that they can go to. And it's like for Denver, if your guys aren't making shots, if Russ is having an off night, you're kind of SOL, and you're gonna have to play him regardless. And for OKC, like Lu Dort is one of their most important players usually, but he only plays 19 minutes tonight because he doesn't have it going, and other guys step up in his absence. So I don't know if having no legs going forward is gonna be an issue because they're gonna get basically 2 full days of rest here. I'm with you. Like I almost feel like this is a coin flip series at this point. I think what we saw in game three was Denver and showing that in a half court execution battle, they are still one of the best teams in the league and one of the hardest teams to beat in that scenario. And then tonight they get in it again, and they just can't make a shot. So I almost feel like going forward, OKC really needs to still like get out in transition and win with their defense and win by causing turnovers. And even though they won in this fashion tonight in a clutch scenario, I just feel better about Denver in the clutch.
I totally agree. I mean, they've been there. They won a championship. They've seen everything you can see. And their number two guys, like, the number two guys for OKC have really been struggling. I mean, I know J-Dub just hasn't been consistent at all. I mean, if you're looking at his breakdown, it's 10 points today, 32 the game before, 17 points, 16 points, 23 points. I mean, for your number one star on a guy, or excuse me, your number two star on a championship team, you need more consistency out of that guy, and he just hasn't been able to find his rhythm yet. And I think tonight he only took 13 shots. You're gonna want more from him, especially in a game like this where it's, a drag it out, low scoring game. You're gonna want guys to get more shots up just for more opportunities to score. I mean, a part of that obviously is the defensive versatility of Denver for sure. And then you're looking at Chet, and this is just not the series for Chet. He had 8 points tonight. He had, excuse me, 11 re or 13 rebounds, which is solid, but just offensively, he is not getting it going. He's shot, I think, like, I don't know. He's made, there's only been two games this series where he's made threes, and he didn't make, he missed three tonight. He's had 8 points, 18 points, 15 points, 12 points, 11 points. So I think you're starting to see what we talked about with this OKC team, where they kind of still need to get their licks in. They kind of need to, go through some battles, which is what they're doing right now, in order for us to feel really comfortable picking them to go really far. And they're just still really young, and that this Denver Nuggets team obviously is very experienced. The core has been together for a while. They've won championships together, and I agree with you. Like, I trust them more in the clutch. And not to mention, he was. Dagnall is a really, really good coach, but their two losses, those were some head scratching last 2 minutes. I thought, like, Adelman really coached really well those last 2 minutes for Denver, and Dagnall had some question mark decisions. I know, like, the first game they lost, it was the fouling with Caruso, like when they fouled, stuff like that. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't feel super comfortable about OKC right now.
Yeah, I mean, I still think OKC is going to win this series, but it is so much closer than I thought. I thought OKC was going to win in 6 games before. They still may win in 6 games, but it is a much like more hard fought and tougher series than I thought. Even the game that they blew him out by 40 or whatever, that was kind of a perfect storm where OKC gets out in transition because they force some turnovers, because the Nuggets miss a bunch of shots early on. And if you get in that kind of transition game with OKC, they can do that to you. And that's their superpower, right? But when it comes to half court execution and when you have a team that's so reliant on one creator with Shea and this team that doesn't have a ton of great shooters around him, the Nuggets are loading up on Shea's drives. They're forcing him to be a playmaker. They're playing a ton of zone that we saw today, and it's a struggle for OKC a lot of these possessions in the half court, and I just don't know if we're going to see Denver have another really off night like this in terms of their shooting and in terms of their half court offense. Jokic, I mean, he hasn't gotten the shot making going, and
No.
it's a huge credit to OKC's defense. Hartenstein is a really good matchup for him, and then having Chet as a guy swarming on the backside and basically bringing 2 7-footers to contest on these floaters and these post-ups, it's an incredible defense, and it's a really tough matchup for Jokic, but you still need better than 7 for 22 and 2 for 8 from three. Some of the threes are wide open and just need to go down at some point. But yeah,
Absolutely.
I
He's
mean,
just—he's tired.
yeah, that's totally fair. It's going to be an absolute battle the rest of the way. I think OKC in seven. I mean, but I'm not going to be surprised at all if Denver wins the series.
Yeah, if anything, I mean, if it goes to seven, you probably feel a little bit better about Denver just off of
Maybe.
the fact that they're just a little bit more clutch right now, I think. I
Yeah,
mean,
I definitely feel better about them in the clutch. The thing is, can they get it to the clutch? And
absolutely.
Game seven to me, yeah, it feels like, oh, that's going to be a clutch game all the way through just because it's a game seven. But I still think OKC, just the way they play, they can get up big in a hurry. They can go on these runs that other teams literally cannot do anything about and can't match. But yeah, and even in the clutch, I almost feel like the way they guarded today, maybe they kind of found something where it's just like, let's just deny Jamal Murray the ball and, face guard him and then throw everything else at Jokic and then let the other guy shoot. Like maybe they found something there. I don't know.
I don't know either, but I tell you what, they remind me a lot of this. The Thunder remind me a lot of the Celtics. Obviously, Thunder are more cohesive and things like that, but it's when it's almost like in the point where they get out to these 20-point leads and you're like, well, I mean, there's just no way this is going to stay. And that's what, I mean, today they were out. They were the first like quarter and a half. I mean, they were just out ahead and then Denver caught up and everything. Now they're not as egregious as the Celtics, but
Yeah, I mean, the
it's more
first
so with the
quarter
three
was
point.
17-8. So
Yeah.
if that's the big lead, I mean, that was just,
No, but
that
then,
is an
but no. It
insane,
went, no. All
scoring
right.
quarter.
That's a weird score to pick. That's not what I was talking about. It went in the second quarter, went all the way up. They were up. It was like 32 to like 19 or something. Like
Yeah.
they were starting to pull away. There's moments where they're pulling away. And it's just like the Celtics, if they start hitting a bunch of threes, they can just go on these runs and put up, 20-point lead on people. And then it's more so about consistency and keeping that lead and sitting on it, which they do better than the Celtics. Don't get me wrong. But it kind of reminds me a little bit like that with how they're just able to get out and score at will, and then sometimes it just kind of peters out for a second there. So for them, it's going to be about closing up. And I mean, they won tonight, and we're talking down on them like they lost. They did win, and that's really impressive. I
And they
just
won a clutch game. They won in the way that we're
yeah,
saying they can't. So they deserve a ton of credit.
absolutely. It's just so fascinating with Denver. Like Denver should not be here. Denver should not be like keeping up with them. And it just shows how good this team was, and maybe how underrated they were coming into it. And maybe I saw people saying like questioning why you would fire Mike Malone, and how, like, as if this game proved anything. And to me, it proves more so, and the series proves more so that firing Mike Malone was the right move, and that Adelman was ready, and that they clearly figured something out with this new coaching staff that they have right now on the fly. And maybe that's just Jokic having more of a voice in the offense and defense, maybe. I don't know, but I do think it was the right move, clearly. I mean, I don't think a team coached by Mike Malone right now, the way that we saw Denver looking going into the series, I don't think they would have gotten two games on OKC.
Yeah, I don't know if I totally agree with that, but I think Adelman's been awesome. And for me, the biggest thing is just the effort overall on defense. Like, engaged Michael Porter Jr., fully engaged Nikola Jokic. Jokic was like a disgraceful defender for a lot of the
Yeah.
regular season. And now he's,
But
fully
that's
locked in,
coaching.
and
When you,
he's been excellent on that end.
I mean, when you lose the locker room, though, that's the first stuff to
Right.
go.
Yeah, that's fair.
So that's coaching. That's coaching related. I mean, that's what that is. So I just think it seems like Malone lost the locker room there, and Adelman has it right now. So, yeah, I thought that was good. Let's go to the Celtics stuff. Like, this is really what I want to talk about right now, the Celtics-Knicks series. Celtics gets a win. They get a win last night, win by 22. And I mean, they played all the hits, really. It was getting big leads, and I just don't think there's any team more so that I watch up by like 22, and I just feel terrible and feel like they're gonna blow it. And that's what I feel about the Celtics team is the third quarter comes around, they're up by like 21. And I'm not comfortable at all. And I, as soon as like, New York hits a couple threes and Celtics start doing what they do, which is just taking terrible jumpers, stopping fast breaks early to go hit, take a contested shot, things like that, you're like, oh shit, they're about to blow this lead. And last night they were able to keep the foot on the gas there and able to not blow it. But like, how are you feeling about this team right now? Because I'm very low on them at the moment.
Yeah, I'm definitely higher on them than you are. I thought honestly, game one, the 63s game, I was, everybody was so mad about the shot quality. I thought through three quarters, I thought they got pretty darn good shots. Now you can say like, well, if you're not making these threes, then you just shouldn't take them even if you're open. And I think there's a philosophical discussion somewhere in there. I lean more towards every shot is its own shot, and if it's a good shot, it's a good shot. But whatever. That fourth quarter, they took really bad shots. They went mismatch hunting and they settled for jumpers and lost the lead. A lot of credit to the Knicks defense and a lot of credit to Brunson for again, coming through in the clutch there. And similar story in game two, but it wasn't the threes at all. I mean, they took, I think, 35 threes in game two. It was just more of, not being able to get good shots late in that game. And capitalize on the mismatches. And then even in game three, which I thought, was easily the best shot quality of any of the three games, very clear that they made major adjustments on, certain actions and stuff. I'm still like, the thing that is concerning to me is that Tatum and Brown don't look comfortable attacking the mismatches for the Knicks. And that was kind of the whole thing about this series that made me so confident in the Celtics is that like Cat and Brunson shouldn't be able to guard our guys. And so far they have on switches. Now, Tibbs is playing Cat in a drop a little bit more than I would expect. And Tatum last game absolutely torched it and really has torched the drop every time he's seen it. But I think there's a version of it maybe where, it's like it's literally like we were talking about with OKC and Denver. If the Knicks can get it to the last 5 minutes and to be a close game, you're not going to feel good about the Celtics.
No, absolutely not. I mean, who's it seems weird, but it's like who's taking this final shot? And against Brunson, I'm not picking anyone over Brunson. Maybe Donovan Mitchell. It's maybe those two. Maybe no, maybe Jokic. I think those are the guys that it's like, who would I want taking a final shot in the game for a game winner? It's probably one of those three guys. And
And no one on the Celtics is close.
no one on the Celtics
Like,
is even close. And honestly, if you were to pick a guy, you'd probably pick Pritchard over anyone else. Like, seriously,
maybe, yeah.
because I mean, Tatum, just how many times have we seen? We know exactly what he's going to do. The Knicks know exactly what he's going to do. The Celtics know exactly what he's going to do. Every final play, and he does it and he misses. And then you have Brown. It's the same idea. It's just this team. I mean, they look super uncomfortable, like you said. That was a really good point. They don't look comfortable playing right now in what the Knicks are offering them, and they should be able to attack it because they have done it all year long. They were able to attack the Knicks, and they just, for whatever reason, they play poorly at home every time and they lose at home constantly. And then they just don't like Brown looks terrible. I mean, last night he started off kind of hot, and then he just isn't looking great. The real issue though is Kristaps Porzingis. I don't know what is going on with him. He is clearly, this virus is messing with him, but I don't know a virus that like messes with your athleticism and your like engagement and your head like that.
It's just
I get
energy.
like,
I mean, it takes the energy out of you. He's clearly not right, so.
yeah, I get that, but I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's surprising how bad he has been, and I mean, they're pretty beat up with injuries. Like, I think Drew and Derek White being healthy is key, and Al Horford, because Al Horford is just so ridiculously important to this team. I mean, the versatility that he brings to the floor on both sides is, it can't be understated how important he is to this basketball team, and a lot of the reason they won last night was Al Horford making huge plays and just being as good as he was. But I mean, this team, I just don't feel comfortable with this team, and I don't see them winning a title right now. I think I'd be very surprised if they make it all the way right now. I mean, they're not in a rhythm, And I don't see it getting better as the playoffs go on. I mean, we've seen this happen with Brown and Tatum before. And I mean, they've been to the finals twice already. And both of those guys did not get it together. So, I mean, I know they ended up winning last year, but I don't feel comfortable right now just shooing them in as.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm still a lot higher on them than you. Like I thought they played an excellent game last game. Yeah, they made some tough shots. Yeah, there was some shooting variance stuff that you could point to and say, well, they were bound to make some threes eventually. But I think, the team overall looked really good. The thing I'm concerned with going forward is like if we run into a team like OKC, that can just switch everything and have these guys like then the mismatch hunting is basically pointless, and we're relying on Tatum and Brown to create against elite defenders on a really good defense. Like then that's where I think they have maybe met their match. But in terms of this round, like I think they're gonna beat the Knicks. I wouldn't be surprised if they win three straight and win in sixth. Beyond that, it's gonna be a battle to beat either Cleveland or Indiana. And then if it comes down to, I mean, who do we think is going to come out of the West? Like Denver, OKC, Minnesota, or the Warriors? I mean, I don't want to see either one of Denver or OKC. So,
Absolutely. And the
yeah,
Warriors, I mean, the Warriors are in their head. I don't think that's an
the
aspect of this
Warriors is
team
the
that's.
exact type of defense that can just completely flummox the Celtics offense. But again, the
Absolutely.
one thing we haven't mentioned though is the Celtics defense has been absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's been insane. I mean,
So.
what Drew Holiday does, if you just want to have a nerdgasm, watch Drew Holiday guard Jalen Brunson and what they're trying to get him switched onto Horford or whoever else
Refuses
is
to be
on the floor.
switched, yeah.
And he just doesn't allow that to happen. And if you're a young guard and you're trying to figure out how to navigate screens, just watch what Drew Holiday does. And I'm definitely gonna make when I have a child, gonna make him watch that because or her watch that because I mean, just watch it. It's fascinating. Like he does not allow himself to be screened, and every action is they're trying to get Jalen Brunson to switch on to probably Al Horford or Pritchard or whoever's on the floor that is the weakest defender. And Drew just does not allow that to happen. And it's fucking awesome. And it's so fun to watch. But one thing I've been noticing is Jaylen Brown off ball defense has been atrocious. He's been caught ball watching a ton. He's
That,
falling asleep in the corner.
yeah, was a
He It's
game. It was
terrible.
game one where OG sparks the
Yeah.
run, and it's Brown giving up that corner three.
Just ball watching. He's sitting there watching Brunson and just loses his man. Like stuff that like we're taught this in third grade. I mean, it's just stuff that you can't be doing. And it's just sometimes he kind of loses his head and his off ball defense has been terrible. And he's a really good defender usually. So that's tough. But I mean, Derek White like his defensive ability at his size, the way that he blocks shots like a guard, he had like two or three huge blocks last night.
He was awesome yesterday.
He like off the backboard, just he was incredible. And yeah, it really starts with him and Drew. They set the defensive tone, and all the guys work hard on defense. But I mean, that's definitely their saving grace in this series. They're gonna have to hope for that 3-point variance, like we talked about, and then just continue to rely on their defense. And I do like that Joe Mazzulla is saying, let's not get in our heads, let's not go away from what made us great, which is shooting threes and playing the Mazzulla ball. Let's keep going with what we're doing, and eventually the stats will catch up and variance will catch up. I do like that aspect of it, but what I liked yesterday was that you could tell they were making a conceded effort to not pass up at open shots at the rim, which they were doing before, where they would have, they would pass up shots close to the rim for three pointers, and that would drive me nuts. Last night they didn't do it, with the exception of Peyton Pritchard driving down. It was a 3-on-2, and he pulls up and takes a three and airballs it. That drove me nuts. I hate when they do shit like that. But I did think they made a conceded effort to actually get to the rim at points when the defense allowed for them to do that. And I like that. I don't love 63s. I like the way they played last night better, where they're taking more threes or less threes, excuse me. But it's just within the flow of the offense more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this team is clearly not playing its best basketball right now. I think, potentially. If we see Porzingis get back to normal, which is a big if, with how he
Yeah.
looks right now, I think this team could still win the championship. I would still say they're probably second in my odds in my head to win it, behind OKC, but it is definitely disappointing, for some of the things
Well,
we saw through the first two games.
there's this toughness streak that they seem to be lacking, where back in the day, it would be smart, would get tangled up and get a few technicals and things like that. They just don't have that guy that
Oh,
does
now you
that,
miss Marcus Smart.
No, I don't miss Marcus Smart, but I miss having an enforcer on the team. Every single one of those teams has it, except for the Celtics. Like, I guess you could argue the Thunder. Well, the Thunder have Hartenstein. Like, Hartenstein will get in and get a technical and get rowdy and stuff like that. But I mean, the Celtics just don't really have that guy that can talk a lot of sh talk shit and like, when, for example, Brunson shoves Horford, and then they kind of talk at each other, but it's like, who's the guy that comes over and like shoves Brunson and kind of starts a fray? Like stuff like that. Like they just have this softness to them that is very frustrating because it seems like they're easy to get into their they get into their heads and then it starts to fall apart. And I think that's why they play badly at home, because I think the fans are really smart. And they start playing the hits, right? They start missing a couple threes, and OG gets a breakaway layup and things like that. And then the fans start getting, start booing and start groaning, and then they start playing bad at home. And I really think that's a part of it, is like the fans can tell when these runs happen, and then the Celtics get in their head or something like that. Because that's the only thing that really explains that. Like, I don't understand why they can't play basketball at home and win games at home. They've always struggled with that. And I think it starts with like that toughness factor. And I worry about teams like Minnesota or what's it called? Like Minnesota, Denver, all the other teams, because like Westbrook will talk shit and get in your face. Ant will do that. And then obviously Draymond does that for the Warriors. And it's like the Celtics don't have one of those guys. And it seems like they need someone to just kind of like fucking ignite the passion in them and fire them up, because sometimes they just come out flat and it's so frustrating. I mean, it drives me nuts.
Yeah, fair enough. I think that might be more of a, we watch this team so much that we just want more out of our guys. But yeah, I totally get what you're saying.
Like, I understand your number one. Like, I understand Tatum not being, I'm not calling him not an alpha male, but he's not that type of guy. And that's fine. I don't think you need to have your number one guy be that. But it's just, we're missing someone on the team that does that shit, where there's a hard foul and they get up and they shove the guy and tell him not to do it. It's like, they don't have that. And it's someone that, you need someone to like yell at them in the locker room and be like, stop playing like a bunch of fucking wimps. And I think it's obviously just because we watch them constantly. And that's why I'm feeling that way. But I just get afraid, because I think like Draymond in the finals, however many years ago, mentally broke Brown. And
Yeah. I
I'm
mean
worried, like,
that's the young Celtics. I still feel like they've come a long way from that point, but
I mean, Jalen still can't really dribble with his left hand. So how much farther have we come, really?
Jalen had some really bad
Tatum's
turnovers.
regressed too.
Well, Tatum just can't score, which is really, really
Yeah.
frustrating because he's really good at everything else. He's awesome on defense. He, wasn't amazing as a playmaker through the first two games, but last night was, I thought, making decision
Yeah.
after decision correctly, but yet can't punish a mismatch, struggling to finish at the rim, keeps settling for jumpers when Cat gets switched onto him. It's like, dude, that guy should not be able to stay in front of you. Why are you trying to shoot it over him? But yeah, I don't know. I think
Okay.
that is part of the deal with Tatum. That's why he's the fifth best player in the league and not the best player in the league. You know what I mean? And that's why we have this
Absolutely.
roster of all these other guys that we're not so reliant on one guy that, we just need to get the ball into the paint and kick it out and get it moving and play driving kick. We don't have to have this awesome isolation scorer. Definitely wish that we had that. Wish Tatum could go toe to toe with guys like Brunson and we could feel comfortable and confident about it. But yeah, I just don't think that's his game, and I think that's okay because of how the team is built.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just, I'm more scared because of, I'm thinking ahead, and it's this, obviously with new ownership and our finances, there's going to be a move that happens this summer. Like, you're probably not seeing Sam Hauser come back, because his contract bumps up to 10 million from, it's at 2 million right now, bumps up to 10 this next year. You're probably going to see one of either Drew or Kristaps, or even potentially Brown or Derek White, get moved to make finances work in this for this team. And when you have a new owner, you're very always scared of new owner syndrome. You saw it, Dallas trading Luka, the Suns owner Ishbia trading for KD, Joe Tsai with the Nets trading for KD, like Daryl Morey. Just there's like a bunch of different, or not, he was an owner, but you know what I'm saying. Like, there's just a bunch of times when new owners come in and they make a big fiery, flashy move, and it causes a bunch of disruption. We talk about on this podcast a lot how important championship windows are. And our window for this year is very thin, because the West is only going to get deeper and deeper,
Well,
and
the path
scarier.
overall is just insane. Like, first of
Yeah,
all, we didn't
exactly.
give enough credit to this Knicks team. Like, this is a good basketball team.
Absolutely.
I still think it's, not a great matchup for the Knicks, but it's a lot better of a matchup than we gave it credit for. And then Indiana's playing at this crazy high level where they might beat this 60 plus win Cleveland team, and I don't think we would be that shocked about it. And then Cleveland is unbelievable when they have all their guys. So it's just it last year was definitely a little bit of we had an easy path, and this year is going to be so much harder if they want to win a championship.
Well, if you think about it too, like, what if Atlanta takes a step or Giannis goes somewhere in the East that makes the whatever team he gets to more important, and it, or someone comes over from the West to the East? Like, the East can get way more difficult, A, and with the teams that are already in there, it's just going to be difficult, is going to get more and more difficult.
I
And
mean, what
then,
if Wemby hits his ceiling and just
well,
goes Bill Russell and
that's exactly what I was just going to say, is
wins
like,
eight
also
straight?
you, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, Wemby is always going to be in the West for the next few years, and that team is going to be very scary too. So this is their window. Not to mention OKC. Like, OKC could add Giannis. Like, they could lose in this round, and literally they have. I'm like, you're laughing, but it's like, what if I traded J Dub and Chet and picks for Giannis? Like, that's a trade that could happen. Like, there's a lot of teams that can get a lot better, and this is our window to win championships. And it's gonna get weird this summer, especially if you lose in round two to this Knicks team that you thought you were a lot better than and were better than in the regular season. That's
Yeah,
where it starts to
100%.
get
I
dark.
still think they're going to beat the Knicks. I still think you're a little
I'm
bit
yeah.
too down on them. I think, blowing the
I've
220
watched this
point
team my
leads.
entire life, and I just it's my fault. I'm speaking through my father right now. That's what's happening.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break and then we'll give you our top five risers. All right, we're back and we're going to give you our top five risers from this year's NBA playoffs. I made a TikTok on this about a week ago, and it was just after the first round ended, and now we're four games into the second round basically, and my list is almost completely different. So definitely a lot of good players to talk about. I do wonder if we have mainly the same guys, because I think over the last week or so, there's been some guys that have emerged that have just made it really easy for me to, put them on my list and kick some other guys off. Why don't you go first?
Yeah, caveat, we did not pick anyone that was over 90 overall on NBA 2K. That was our goal, our rule. So all these guys are 90 or excuse me, under 90 overall on NBA 2K. I have not looked at that TikTok, so I don't know any of these guys that you may have. I do think we might have some of the same because you and I text every night about a different guy, and usually it's just me texting the guy's name in all caps. But okay, number one for me, I'm gonna go from like lower riser to the highest riser, in my opinion. Max Strus. Max Strus has been incredible for this Cleveland Cavaliers team, to the point where they lose DeAndre Hunter and you're thinking like, I mean, he played the other night, but DeAndre Hunter goes out and you're kind of worried, and no problem, man. Max Strus is in there to score and play just meaningful basketball. Like, I think for him, he's just one of those sneaky athletic guys, and you say that because he's a white guy, obviously, but also he is genuinely sneaky athletic, and I just think he has such big shot ability. I always am very surprised that I've been watching these Cavs games, and I really think, like, obviously Donovan Mitchell is not eligible for this list, but he is just on a whole other level. But Max Strus right now, he's averaging 13 points per game. He's shooting 42% from three on 7 attempts a game, or just about 8 attempts a game. And he's really like making his presence felt by hitting, some of the bigger shots in the game. He's a very solid facilitator. He's averaging 4 assists per game, 5 rebounds. And he does it on a half a turnover a game. I mean, he's someone that is obviously he's going to be left alone a little bit by defenses, but I think defenses now are saying like they actually have to guard Max Strus because he's hitting shots, and he has the ability to get to the rim off of, lazy closeouts, or hit, attack defenders by hitting threes off of lazy closeouts. But he also knows how to work within the offense that the Cavs are running and facilitate really well. And I just feel really confident in him as a player, like hitting a very important shot. I think if there is 3 seconds left on the shot clock and DeAndre Hunter gets it in the corner and there's like, it's under 2 minutes in the game, I literally think I would be shocked if he touches the net with the basketball. And Max Strus, I'm like, that's going in.
Yeah, you'd be
And
shocked if
he
it
just,
missed.
yeah. And I just think he is someone that has been in a ton of big games. He's already been into a finals. And I feel really comfortable with him and confident in him. And he's been a huge riser for me. I think he's like clearly one of the more important players on this team, on this Cleveland Cavaliers team.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what I was saying. I have him too, and I think it's pretty obvious over these last two games how important he is. And I think you nailed it, overall, but what I would really highlight is he's a guy that you can really run action through. He's not just a shooter. Like, he can not only attack closeouts, but also run an offense. If Donovan's off the ball, if it's a transition situation, like, he is great at getting into the paint and finding the open guy and making decisions with the ball in his hands. So I won't say any more about Max Strus. You covered it all really well. I will
Well,
go
real quick,
to,
how many times is he like kind of pump faked in the corner on transition and then gone and dunk like two-handed it at the rim, and it's
Talk
like,
about sneaky
whoa.
athletic.
Yeah, it's like, whoa. And it's like the defender too is like, there's no way he's gonna actually like yam this right now. So he's been sticking out. Shout out Max Strus. Great name too.
Okay. My guy is Naz Reid, and it's not a huge statistical bump for Naz Reid in terms of raw scoring, but it is an efficiency bump. He has gone from 55.6% effective field goal percentage to 68.2, which is absurd. He's shooting 50% from three, two and a half, excuse me, five attempts a game. He's making two and a half threes a game. So his shot is just absolutely butter right now, and they have needed it so much, because this Timberwolves team is very, ant reliant, as they should be, but they desperately need shooting. And when they go small with Naz at the five, that's their best offensive lineup, with Dante in there as well. And Naz has stepped up. He's, been great in transition. He's been great hitting the trail threes, and he's been great hitting the threes on swings and on pops, and just punishing defenses with his shooting and with his scoring. And I think it again speaks to, like, the lineup versatility thing that we talk about. Like, Rudy's a really important player for them, but when that offense is struggling and you need to go small and you need to, combat the other team's offensive run, Naz is the guy for them. And he's also done a really good job on defense. Like, he had some possessions in the Lakers series where they're hunting him with Luka, and for a while, like, Chris Finch is asking him to play drop, or maybe they were, like, trying not to switch him at all. But then they ended up just going, like, you know what, Naz, you're gonna have to step up, you're gonna have to switch, and you're gonna have to make a play. And he did, and he literally, like, got multiple stops on Luka in huge moments in that series. And he's been incredible on offense. I think everybody loves Naz Reid. I don't know if you could even say enough about him to like, say anything new about him, because he's just that beloved. But he's been great.
He's incredible. I think a lot of the reason that this team was so willing to part ways with Cat is like it was pretty evident that Naz Reid was the guy that needs to be playing more. And I still think he still Gobert obviously makes it hard for you to play. It's hard to play a Naz Reid, Rudy Gobert double big lineup there. He still makes it doable because he's that good. But it's just not Naz Reid is incredible. And like I said, there's not much more you can say. The guy hits very open shots all the time, and he hits like semi-open shots a lot of the time.
And
And then
he's,
not to
like, can
mention,
attack closeouts at 6'9" and handle. Like, he's a unique,
He's a weird player.
ball handler for his size and position.
Because he's one of those guys that you can like, it almost seems like he either grew up as a point guard and grew late, or he learned how to dribble late, but learned how to dribble from like point guard, like was trained like a point guard as a 7 footer, if that makes sense. Like he just looks weird when he does it, but he's so good. And defensively too, he's just so versatile. I think because he's so big and he's sort of not heavier set, but he's like not lanky per se, like not as skinny as those lanky guys. You don't think he's going to move as fast or as fluidly as he does. And he just does. He's just a very fluid mover. And he's very surprising on the court. So Naz Reid, I mean, he's a pod favorite for sure. I think we absolutely love him. He's a guy that this offseason is going to be really interesting for him because he's clearly worth more than what he's being paid. And I think he can test the open waters, or it could be interesting there because if I'm Minnesota, I'm throwing some cash at that guy. But they're kind of tied up with their books right now. So especially with Randle playing better, I don't know what they end up doing, but it's clear their priority should be to keep Naz. So he's a guy that can make another team really good if he ends up leaving. My next player, Aaron Nesmith. You and I have texted about him quite often. In fact, we said that this guy, he's a guy that would be fucking awesome on you know who, the Celtics, because one, he has balls and is willing to get chippy and just be a fucking maniac. And two, he just plays so hard. I think we never actually. I texted something about Aaron Nesmith being on the Celtics, and you said, I think we might have watched the same sequence and thought the same thing. Was the sequence when he came in and dunked it on Mitchell? Was that the sequence you were talking about? Because that's what I was thinking of. And I mean, just one of those plays. Like, the guy plays like a fucking this doesn't make sense, but he plays like a pogo stick. I don't know why that is what I feel, but it's like it's just intent drilling, and he plays so fucking hard. He puts his body in the line, he dives on the floor, and then not to mention he's shooting like 50% from three, or 55% on, like five attempts, hitting three of them. He's just playing incredible right now. And another guy like Strus, where you feel comfortable when he's a part of the action. You don't feel uncomfortable with him, and he's a very legit two-way guy, like a two-way wing. And you can't have enough of those guys. Couple that with his intensity and his, the fact that he's been there before in the Eastern Conference Finals and has shown up in big moments. I like Nesmith's taken a real leap here. And I think with the Celtics, what you saw there was he was a shell-shocked kid that would airball a lot of corner threes and look like he wasn't supposed to be out there, and the moment was too big. Something clicked in him when the Celtics traded him, and now he's a fucking dog, and he's not afraid of the moment. He's not afraid of anyone. He thinks he's the best guy on the floor, and he's playing really, really well. So he's a big riser for me.
Yeah, I love it. It's so weird with him because he came out of the draft as this awesome shooting prospect and then was literally just a defender and energy guy for the Celtics and couldn't hit a shot. And now that the shot's going, he is a super valuable two-way player and a starter on an unbelievable team. I agree with everything you said. I have his teammate who is on this list annually now, Andrew Nembhard, who after shooting 29% in the regular season from three is now shooting 50%. It just something happens to him when he gets into the playoffs that he just the basket looks bigger. He went from averaging 10 in the regular season all the way up to 15 now. He hasn't had his best games recently, but the playoffs overall, it's just a different player from the regular season. Like he looks so much more comfortable taking these big shots, creating on his own, scoring on an island on fast breaks. He's got this shoulder bump move, which is just like he's going full speed and he just gives you the shoulder and it's just throwing guys off and like you'll see guys, stumbling back like out of bounds and Nembhard has a wide open layup because he's perfected this move on the fast break. So he's been a really fun watch. There's just something about it. I don't know. There's nothing. It's indescribable what happens to him when he gets in the playoffs. I hope it continues his whole career. I hope he averages 8 points for the rest of his career in the regular season and then just explodes every playoff. So it'd be
24 in the
hilarious.
playoff. Well, I said something about I would have Jokic, Brunson, and I forget who else, and I forgot Nembhard. Like Nembhard actually should be on that list too, because I mean he's already hit a game winner, or no, wait, not a game winner, or like a game. He's hit some huge shots already. I think game one of he hit a game winner against the Bucks, I believe, in this year's playoffs already. So he's already hitting big shots again. He's insane. Like he's built for the playoffs, and it's so weird because, like you said, he doesn't play like that. Like he plays hard always in the regular season. I think every time I've been to a Pacers game, I've come back and said Nembhard's the guy that I watched the entire
Well, the
time.
defense is ridiculous.
He's just full court guarding you the hardest he can. It's insane, but his shot making just goes up a level in the playoffs, and it's indescribable. I don't get how it works, but yeah, it's such a good pick. He was on the list as well for me. My next guy is going to be Alex Caruso, actually. I think a lot of people, same thing. I mean, a lot of people that they make that trade, right? And they're like, holy fuck, OKC just fleeced Chicago and got like all they had to give up was Giddy. And then in the regular season, Giddy starts to pop and really starts playing well. And Caruso was, injured for parts of it, and he just wasn't really playing up to his level that we've seen him. In LA and in Chicago, and then the playoffs roll around, and this guy is just built for the playoffs. He's their Jrue Holiday. He does everything right. I don't know why I said Holiday, kind of weird like that, but he is their Jrue Holiday. He does everything right. He's the energy of the team, and he's just defensively, I mean, he's just a nightmare to go against. And then when he's hitting shots and facilitating and diving on the floor, he just does everything on the basketball floor that you could want him to do. And he's been super important to this Nuggets team. I mean, he was a huge reason they won tonight, or excuse me, to this Thunder team. And he was a huge reason the Thunder won tonight. Is just he, like you said, when Dort wasn't able to get it going, you had Caruso coming off the bench and just really making an impact. So Caruso is just incredible for this team.
Yeah,
And he's huge.
he's an absolute madman. I mean, everything you said about him is true. And on top of it, he's like fighting for offensive rebounds and defensive rebounds with like Jokic and Gordon, and like getting hands on the ball in these spots where you wouldn't think he would. He actually is really smart as a screener, and tonight had a play late where, you know, the first action gets blown up and then Caruso comes right up and brings Jokic into the action, and the Thunder end up getting good stuff off it, and he's making big shots now. I think he's maybe the best off-ball guard defender in the league. You could say he's just the best guard defender in the league, and I wouldn't have any problem with it, but him off the ball specifically is insane. The way he can help and recover, gets hands on everything, like times his stunts and his helps so perfectly. I didn't have him on my list, but it's a great pick. I do have a guy that he's going against right now in Aaron Gordon, who
Damn
averaged
it.
14.7 in the regular season and is now at 18.6, and he's been rock solid all the way through. Like the shot making, the jumper we talked about, he went from a bad shooter to a really reliable, you know, 40 plus percent shooter on pretty good volume. So you're getting, you know, all that athleticism and size and rebounding and toughness and defense, and then you're adding on he's a really good offensive player now and he can make big shots. He's just been unbelievable. So I don't know, you know,
Yeah.
he's kind of been the definition of a riser. I know he had a weird, really weird regular season in and out of the lineup.
Well, he was my number one on this list because, I mean, the leap that he's taken. First off, he's at 84 overall on NBA 2K.
A bat.
That is insane. That is ridiculous. He's playing like a 92 overall, I'll tell you that much. And yeah, I mean, I don't want to just repeat everything you said, but when he got into Denver, you were like, this guy is so athletic that when he's just chilling in the dunker spot, Jokic is gonna change his career. And that was true,
It
but
absolutely did change his
it is
career.
definitely true. But he's added depth to his game. Like, he just was never a shooter like what he's become now. And then they brought him in as this guy that can score from the dunker spot and then also just be a really, really good defender with his size and athleticism. And now he's an elite defender. Like, that is just what Aaron Gordon is. He is an absolute dog who's an elite defender who has a ridiculous athleticism that's a great equalizer, and now he's shooting on top of it. I mean, you can't really get asked for much more than that right now. He's the definition of a riser. He's been playing incredible, and I think like this changes what your views are on the Nuggets if this is what he's going to be in the playoffs, because you're not that far away with Aaron Gordon and Nikola Jokic playing the way that they're playing. You throw in Jamal Murray playing solid, and you got a really good team there. So, Aaron Gordon is definitely a riser for me. I picked his teammate Christian Brown. I think the fact that this is year three or four-ish for him, and they just throw him in, and he's like, now you're going to be a starter on a team that wants to win the championship right now, and you're going to play very meaningful minutes, and he just does it, and he does it effectively and efficiently. Is really impressive to me. I love his game, and he hasn't been shooting well. So eventually, when he does start to shoot well, he can contribute even more. But he's averaging 11.5 points per game. And really, with him, he's just so smart. The moment's never too big for him, and he's just such a winner. He's won at all levels in high school. He won a state championship. He won, obviously, a national title with Kansas, and now he's just winning again with the Nuggets. So I think he's just one of those winning guys that you want on your basketball team. And watching him in this playoffs, I can't help but feel so impressed by him and the fact that he just got taken, you know, as a kind of a late pick in the first and just thrown into this team and is playing important minutes. And you can argue like Nuggets would really be hurting without him.
Yeah, he's been great. I wouldn't have him on this list just because the shooting hasn't been great. He averaged more points during the regular season. Not that raw scoring is ever everything, but the defense for him in the last game three, I thought down the stretch against Shai, I thought was one of the biggest reasons the Nuggets won that game, especially in the overtime. Christian Brown was amazing at contesting and making SGA think twice about a shot, pass out of shots, cutting off his drives over and over again. Like he was really good in that game. And like you said, he's not scared of the moment, which is so good to see from a young player. Especially, you know, in these high leverage games and intense moments. My last guy is gonna actually be Julius Randle, who I think is a nice little story for us, Max,
Yes.
because it's a guy that we, you know, have given a lot of flack to over the years and is honestly just straight up proving us wrong. He was averaging 18 points during the season, up to 22 now, 4.7 assists during the season and up to 6.4 now. I think his passing and playmaking has been so important for this Minnesota team. He's been super unselfish, and you can see that, you know, the vision with him is there. Like, he sees things that a lot of guys his size and position don't see, in terms of just reading the floor and you know, creating advantages for his team. He's just a really talented, gifted, natural passer. And I think, you know, the bully ball stuff with him, sometimes it gets old. In the playoffs, not so much when it's working and when the shots are going in. I think he's been excellent, so I think he definitely deserves a shout here.
He was mine too. That's funny that, yeah, I was gonna do this whole thing about how I should apologize to him and all this because, well, I've flip-flopped more than I would like to imagine. Because I remember, if you remember, I was very pro this trade for
You were.
Minnesota. And I don't think I was right because, I mean, the way the regular season went was kind of iffy, but,
I think you were right. I think these playoffs have proved that that was a good trade for Minnesota. I think it was a actually classic win-win.
absolutely. And I think with him, it's the style of basketball that he plays actually lends itself to playoff basketball where it gets down to the grinded out possessions and guys' legs are tired. And I just think a lot of jump shooting is tough. And you kind of want, like, I kind of want a guy that can just bully his way to the rim no matter how tired he is. And that's just what Julius Randle does. Not to mention, he is a great passer. Like, the frustrating thing about Julius Randle is not that he's a bad player. It's that we know how good he can be, and he just didn't do the things that he needed to be doing, which would get really frustrating for us.
Sometimes he just liked the jab step too much, yeah.
Exactly. And now that he's like, because we would see flashes in New Orleans, which he was with Chris Finch back then. So it makes sense that he's back to where he's at because clearly Chris Finch has this ability to get to him. And like I said, like, he thinks he's the best player on the floor, which is great, especially in the playoffs when there's like weird mind games that come into play, and you need your guys to be like, I am the best player on the floor. Next shot, doesn't matter what happened last shot, stuff like that. And that's what his bread and butter is he's a guy who's not going to focus on the last shot. He's always going to think he's the best player on the floor. And when you're on a Minnesota team that desperately needs scoring wherever you can get it, Julius Randle is a perfect addition to that team. So shout out to him because he has definitely been a riser. In this playoffs, and I don't mean to say anything mean, but I don't know if he would be that effective on literally any other team except for the Timberwolves. So there's that. But yeah, he shout out to him because seriously, he is taking a big step for sure.
Yeah, and I think there's something to be said in terms of the Cat trade specifically, where you could argue Randall's play style might even fit a little better than Cat's with this team. When you talk about how much, you know, creation was Ant was relied on for last year, and now, you know, Randall is there to take away a lot of that creation issues. Now, obviously, it's a big jump shooting trade-off, and that's really the
Yeah.
whole issue with Minnesota. But yeah, like I said, I think it's a proving to be a win-win trade, and Randall has proven a lot of us wrong. But that's it for me. That was all five. You did five, right?
Yeah. Yep, that was it for us. Yeah, thank you guys for listening. I think tomorrow Jordan and I are going to do a quick little just a little live reaction maybe on YouTube, or we'll definitely record it too and post it on Spotify and stuff of just the NBA draft lottery. We're very excited. I think having had Ben on and talking about the draft and learning a little bit about it, I'm even more excited. Really, it's who's going to get Cooper Flagg is very exciting to me, but I think the way that it pans out could be really interesting. I know, I forget the teams off the top of my head, but like Philly could literally get the pick. And that would be shocking. So, there's just a lot of like cool stuff that we can cover. It won't be long. It'll be like a little couple minute
It'll
long.
basically be a Cooper Flagg discussion.
Yes. Cooper Flagg discussion and then kind of just feeling out how
And who
everyone
got
else.
screwed? Yeah, like if
Yeah,
Charlotte ends
stuff like
up at
that.
10 or like the Wizards have 8.
The Wizards are at 15 and it's like, God damn it. So
That
yeah, it's just gonna be
stinks.
something quick. And then we're gonna go back to our Sunday schedule. So we'll be recording every Sunday from now on. And then, just for the rest of the playoffs for sure. So thank you all for listening. If you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe and leave a comment. It helps us out so much. If you're on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon, wherever you get this podcast, please leave a 5-star review, share with your friends. It helps us out tremendously. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. And we love you all. Thanks for listening and peace.